Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And I am joined tonight by QB1 JR. JR, say what's up to the people, my man.
What's going on, people? Happy to be back for another edition.
Yes, sir. And also joined with the always punctual? Nah. The always late RB4, Mr. Saxy Prince, Yinka Allende. What's going on, fam?
Hey, I'm always punctual to being late. So, yeah, you're welcome.
Facts. And yeah, we are missing our man Miles Gorham this evening, so it is my responsibility to remind all of y'all that Yinka is always late, because that's normally Miles's role on the podcast. Is a first and foremost thing is to let y'all know Yinka be late all the time, so I will take all care time. Of that for Miles today. So,
I got a question for y'all before we hop in. What's at the top of y'all's playlist today? For me personally, one of my favorite songs of all time, so that's an old school joint, Mac Morrison, Return of the Mac. Listen to that song probably every day.
All right.
What's the top of y'all playlist?
The top of my playlist for this whole weekend has been children's music. My wife was out of town for a ladies' weekend, celebrating her birthday with some of her friends. And, I've been running Daddy Daycare over here. So pretty much listen to My Little Pony, some Alvin and the Chipmunks. You know, all the classics, you know, all weekend.
So
my wife is back today.
It's
a beautiful thing. I can actually listen to some music with some curse words when I'm in the car again. So I'm excited, man. You know, it's a beautiful thing.
What about you, JR?
Yeah, I know Travis Scott is my guy. That's what I listen to every single day. Birds in the Trap, Same Ignite, great album.
Except at the gym today when you left your headphones at home.
I know, man. It was terrible. I had to run 2 miles with no headphones.
Oh, that is terrible.
Awful.
I mean, first mistake was running 2 miles, but
that was the very first mistake, my man.
You can't gain that after playing 20. Get that beer good, man. Can't have that.
All right, so I guess we can jump into some breaking Vikings news. Obviously, OTAs are going to be getting started this week. And I guess the big Vikings news that dropped today was that Zim is not going to be around for OTAs. He's not going to be around the team for a couple of weeks because he had to have an 8th eye surgery. And so I wanted to get y'all's take on that. How do you think that's going to affect the team? What changes do you foresee kind of in the way the team is coached, run? In the coming weeks over OTAs, but as we get into the season, just based on the recurrent issues that Zim has had with this eye and potential complications that could happen if anything pops up again.
I kind of compare it to Zim being the teacher and the other coaches being the substitute teacher for OTAs. All of us know we've been in that situation where the teacher misses a couple of days or just a single day and the substitute comes in and, you know, it seems like more of a relaxed environment, but you feel like you can get away with some stuff you're not used to getting away with when the teacher is there. So I think they have a good enough veteran presence to where they will be okay, but I still think he needs to name an assistant head coach at some point, whether that's Andre Patterson or whoever it may be, Mike Prefer, whoever it may be, just because, you know, titles mean a lot in football, and we know that. If he was to name somebody the assistant head coach, it kind of would make them respect him a little bit more, so to speak, as opposed to just having certain coaches run certain areas of practice, because it's kind of like they're looking around. They don't really know who's in charge either, so it's kind of like a trial by air thing. And for the player's sake, it's going to be a little weird, and I think Everson Griffin touched on that a little bit with Chris Thompson in his quotes today, saying it's going to be a little weird, but, you know, they still have to come in and work, because Zim is going to watch that film at the end of the day, no matter what condition his eye is in. So I think it's going to be a little weird at first, but I think it'll get better as time goes on.
How about you, Yinka? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, towards the end of the season last year, I think it was the Dallas game, I had put out a tick on Twitter where I had maybe it's the best for Zim to be shut down for the rest of the year, because he had already been at that point on his, I don't even know, I think it was like third or fourth surgery as far as his eye goes. And I was just like, well, this is becoming an issue. And as being the head coach, you know, having him missing games is not something that's, you know, ideal for the players, but more importantly, not ideal for him and his, you know, his family and stuff. I am more so leaning on the side with, you know, maybe it's the most beneficial to just shut Zim down until training camp and see, you know, how he's feeling. And, you know, even if that's going to be the case, shut him down for, you know, up until the start of the season. And it, even as extreme as even considering starting to shut him down for the year and just giving him a year to recover and get back to, you know, full health. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, the issue with the eye is obviously the constant re-injuring it due to stress and, you know, all the, you know, anxiety and all the additional, you know, mental stuff that goes along with being a head coach. So, yeah, I guess my stance is I'm okay with shutting him down. I agree with JR. I would probably put Prefer as interim head coach. I think he did a stand-up job in the Dallas game. Just because the way that he kind of thinks about, he has to think about the entire team, being a special teams guy. And then I would, you know, maybe elevate, you know, Andre Patterson as, you know, maybe an assistant interim head coach, if you can even put that title on, just so that, you know, the team has some sort of direction. They can feel as if, you know, even if it's still coming from Zim, it's being implemented every single day. I know that OTAs is, you know, without pads and stuff, but, you know, you really can get some level of progress done in this, some of these off-season workouts and stuff.
Yeah, man. And I look at this, I think it might actually be a positive for Zim and his growth as a leader over the long term. Because I know one of the things that we've talked about a couple of times on here is that maybe it's time for Zim to take that step back and learn to take on that more of a, that CEO running things from a distance type of look. And we know Zim's going to be involved. Like JR said, we know he's going to be looking at that tape. But with him not being able to really be there, be as hands-on, I think it's going to force Zim to adjust his leadership style, his coaching style, and learn to, A, maybe delegate a little bit more than he'd felt comfortable with doing in the past, and B, help him to take maybe that more of a bird's-eye view that can help him, yeah, help him in some of the situations even that we saw during last year when he might have been so micro-focused on something with the defense that maybe some of the game management aspects of things didn't go exactly the way we want to. So the way I look at it, yeah, like obviously the first and foremost thing that we're thinking about here is Zim getting healthy and take as much time away as he needs to do so. I don't think there's any way that he – yeah, I don't think there's any way that he stays away into the season. I think this is going to be a few weeks now, and then – you know, Zim will probably drive his truck through the gates to get back in after a couple weeks away. So I think it's a couple weeks now, and I hope anyway that Zim is able to take this time to learn to, yeah, become maybe a different kind of, or evolve into an even better leader than the guy that we have right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because, I mean, I was thinking as you're talking, like, Zim's obviously his passion is defense. He does well with defense, but I would almost want to see him become so good with not just his own defense, but obviously being able to identify the tendencies of other teams' defenses so that he can, you know, he can help obviously the, you know, Pat Shurmur as far as like, this is what the defense is throwing at you. This is probably what they're thinking. So these are maybe some of the, you know, in-game adjustments that you can make because of the looks that they keep giving to you. So, I mean, his pedigree is defense, and I'm not sure if he'll ever become an offensive genius or guru, but I feel like he can, because he's going to step back and, or if he steps back and takes that more CEO role, you know, he can be more beneficial to the offense because he can better dissect what opposing defenses are doing.
And this might be a blessing in disguise too. Like we talk about all the time, Jason, where Zim can finally just step back and be the CEO of the total operation, and George Elwers can kind of give his imprint on the defense and exactly what he wants to do. We've seen him as a play caller against the Cowboys, where they arguably played their best game of the season. So maybe this might be a blessing in disguise for George Edwards as well, to where he can implement what he wants to do and just put his imprint on the defense as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're all on the same page there. And guess you know, shifting gears from Zim and kind of the worry that took over Vikings Twitter first thing this morning with the news of his eye and him stepping away. Let's move to a lighter subject, which is yet another subject that set Twitter ablaze over the weekend, which was QB rankings. So there have been a couple sets of QB rankings that have come out over the past couple of days, one from a gentleman named Jonathan, one from our own Drew from Vikings territory there. And so I know I flipped those to you guys over the weekend and wanted to get your takes on these QB rankings and what you thought when you looked at them and what really jumped out to you in terms of things they got right, things they got wrong, and maybe some guys that you would shuffle around a little bit. Starting with you, Yinka.
I'm gonna start with Drew's ranking because I kind of have it more in front of me right now. For me, you know, obviously the top two guys, I've always seen it as, you know, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. I think you can make an argument for why either one of those two was one or two. I think Aaron Rodgers is obviously arguably one of the best passers we've ever seen in the game and improvisers, as well as Tom Brady just kind of has this clutch cutthroat mentality to him. So again, you can either put either or. Obviously Tom Brady being a guy who's has more rings, Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion, being able to do more with his skill set. And then next was, you know, Drew Brees, and, you know, still having Big Ben in the top five. I guess the biggest issue I had with Drew's ranking was Andrew Luck being so high. Now, this is not to take away. I still think Andrew Luck is easily a top 10 quarterback. He is what you think of when you think of a quarterback, arm talent, you know, accuracy, you know, athletic ability, size, all that stuff. My issue with Andrew Luck is sometimes his decision making. I think that's one of the biggest things that will sometimes get him in trouble, you know, throwing quite a bit of interceptions and stuff. But that's really one of his biggest knocks. But other than that, I mean, he's a pretty rounded guy as far as being in a, you know, top 10 quarterback. I did like the good majority of the rest of the list. I do consider Cam Newton a top 10 quarterback. Not a lot of people do, but I think he is. I think if you got him more talent, you would see a lot more of the physical, you know, skill sets that you can already see go on. I still don't put Derek Carr as a top 10 quarterback. I know that might get a lot of people upset, but I don't see him as – I see him as a fringe top 10 quarterback, but I don't see it just yet just because of, you know, obviously scheme definitely plays a huge part in putting forth his encouraging more of his, you know, the things that he does do well, and obviously masking some of the things that he doesn't do well. But other than that, I think, you know, after you get past, you know, 14, 15, in my opinion, or, you know, basically 12 through 14, it's really a crapshoot as far as who you think is going to be, who you think is the best or not. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. You got into the crapshoot section. I figured that you were the analysis was starting to wind down there. So sorry to cut you off, but you know,
no, it's all good.
We call JR our QB1 on here on the regular. JR obviously has some experience with the quarterback position. So JR, what do you think? We'll start with Drew's rankings since that's where Yinka kicked things off. What were your thoughts? What jumped out at you? Floor is yours.
You know, I thought Drew's rankings were pretty solid for the most part. You know, the things with quarterback rankings is they're always going to differentiate based on the person, because some people are numbers guys and some people are eye test guys. So it's really going to be based on that. So you can tell Drew is more of a eye test guy, so to speak. And, you know, everybody knows that he's a huge Andrew Luck fan. I'm a big Andrew Luck fan, but I don't think he is a top five quarterback in the league right now. He has the potential to be, and, you know, we've all said that pre-draft, that he has the potential to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But like Yinka touched on, his decision-making has been really poor to this point, and that's really what's held him back at this point. So I wouldn't put him in the top five right now. I kind of will replace him with Russell Wilson, in my opinion, just because I think Russell Wilson is a top five NFL quarterback, in my opinion, just because early on in Russell's career, they kind of used the defense as a crutch for him as he grew into the system and got better. But now he has the ability to take over games. And he's shown that the past two seasons as well. He's had statistically, I think statistically last year was the best year of his career. So, and as you go down, Drew's list, I don't know if he got tired at the end or what. Drew knows he knows he's my guy. But he put Deshaun Watson over Blake Bortles and Jared Goff, and he hasn't played a snap yet. So you really can't do that right. You really can't do that right Fire. Now. So
yeah, but, and I think that you guys you both raised some really, really great points there in terms of the quarterbacks. And I wanted to go back to something Yinka mentioned that obviously would probably be the most controversial quote unquote take that folks would take away from this initial commentary is Derek Carr not necessarily being as high up as the mainstream, I guess, tells us that he is. And I guess that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about a little bit in terms of Derek Carr. Like when you look at his like yards per attempt and different things like that, they're not really anything particularly spectacular. Yeah, so I guess what are your deep dive thoughts on Derek Carr in terms of where he is as a QB? Is he really as good as we're told, or is it really the fact that he has, you know, Amari and Crabtree out there kind of elevating, you know, his play based on what's going on, JR?
I think it's a little bit of both. Coming into the draft, everybody knew Derek Carr was a polarizing prospect, not off the field, so to speak, but everyone knew that his biggest deficiency was that he struggled in a muddy pocket. So what that means is he struggled against pressure. And what Oakland went out and did is they shored up their offensive line, which was great. And that's a great job. Great job by Reggie McKenzie, the Oakland Raiders GM, just understanding what type of prospect that he was drafting. You know, you go out and get a guy like a Kelechi Osemele, and you get a guy like Donald Penn as well. And you draft a guy like Gabe Jackson as well. So he did a good job of surrounding Carr first with the offensive line and then getting Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree as well. So understanding that Carr isn't necessarily a guy that can elevate talent around him. He really has to have weapons around him and the proper protection for him to succeed and for you to see the best of Derek Carr. And I don't think we've seen the best of Derek Carr to this point. I think he still can get better. Just because, I mean, I don't really know how to put this. He's sort of, I don't want to say overrated at this point, but I think he's a little bit better than what he's gotten credit for. I actually said that backwards, sorry. He's not as good as what he's getting credited for right now. But I think his potential, he can get a lot better than what he's shown to this point. But injuries is a big question with him as well. He's gotten hurt, I believe, every single year he's been in the league. And even last year, he got hurt in the playoffs, it was right before the playoffs. So I think Derek Carr still has a ways to go before being that top 10 guy, but he's shown flashes of being that top 10 potential quarterback, but they've done a great job of, first of all, protecting him and surrounding him with the proper weapons as well.
Perfect, perfect. That's a great take there, and I think that the way that we're going to make this awkward transition from talking about Drew's list to going into what was going on in Jonathan's list is talk about something that is – I guess fairly consistent between the two of them that I know I disagree with fairly strongly is the fact that they both have Kirk Cousins pretty low on their list. And Kirk Cousins, I know, is a polarizing player in that his numbers are great, but oftentimes guys who primarily base their analysis in film or traits don't really love Kirk Cousins all that much. Based on his results, Kirk Cousins is easily a top 10 quarterback for me over the last 3 years. What's your take? Because I know Jonathan and Drew are both fairly low on Kirk, but his results are very, very strong. I guess, Yinka, where are you at with Kirk Cousins, and how do you feel about where he's ranked on both of these lists?
I'll be honest. I was, I think for the long, when the whole thing with RG3 and Kirk Cousins was going down, I was very much against it because of, I guess, my bias towards RG3 and how well I felt he was doing. And he was, in my opinion, he was supposed to be the face of Washington. Now, I actually went back and watched some Kirk Cousins film, and Kirk Cousins doesn't wow you really with anything that he does on the field. Like, but you, if you go back and you actually truly analyze what he's doing, there are aspects where he actually is taking apart some teams. I mean, you can see the consistency with Kirk Cousins. I think that's the thing that's overlooked about Kirk, is because he's so consistent, and he's been consistent for the last couple of years. And that's where again, he gets lost in like the shuffle because he's not always making the big throw, the big play all the time. I mean, he's not running, scampering for, you know, 30 yards down the field because it's open up in the middle. But I mean, again, he's bringing you that level of consistency. He's not going to be, you know, that huge rah-rah leader either. Sans the, you like that. But I think he does what I like to see more so with more of my quarterbacks versus sometimes the flashes is consistency. And that's what I think Kirk does for you on the field.
How about you, JR? What do you think?
You know, I've said repeatedly that I think Kirk Cousins and Sam Bradford is one the same person, so to speak. But the difference is Kirk Cousins has gotten better every single year that he's been in the league, and Bradford has kind of stayed steady or plateaued every single year that he's been in the league outside of 2016, which was an extreme outlier. But the thing about Kirk Cousins is that he has to be surrounded by a whole bunch of weapons just because, similar to David, I say that every time, Derek Carr, he doesn't have the arm strength or the arm talent to elevate, you know, people around him. He just doesn't have it in him. He's a guy that's shown to be extremely accurate from time to time, but he's not a guy that consistently can push the ball down the field and make other guys around him better. He has to have those weapons around him that's able to get that yards after the catch, or guys with extreme catch radiuses, just because he has to have that, just because he's not a quarterback that can make those guys look better around him. But I'm a big Kirk Cousins fan, and I think he's gotten better every single year he's been in the league. And I think him and Jay Gruden are a perfect match together.
So how do you feel about his place on Jonathan's rankings down there in the 20s?
I mean, I don't like to discredit anybody's work or saying that they're not putting the work in, but, you know, I respect his opinion. He's shown a lot of clips as he watched, and, you know, he's backed up his statements, but I completely disagree with his stance on Kirk Cousins. And, you know, having a guy like Mike Glennon at 20 and Kirk Cousins at 26, I completely disagree with that stance or that statement. I think Kirk Cousins is a top 16 to 20 quarterback in the league, and he's shown a guy that can be in that, you know, 12 to 14 range, so to speak, from time to time. I don't think he's consistently put that together over a season to be in that top 12 to 14 range, but, you know, he's shown flashes of being that guy that can enter that territory. So I think he's in that 14 to 18 range, in my opinion.
So as a guy who does a lot of obvious tape evaluation, how do you separate, like, the skill from kind of the talent or the results when you look at someone? Because when you look at Jonathan's list especially, a lot of the guys who are maybe ranked a little higher than you might think they should be are very physically talented people. Like, Cam is at number 3. Obviously, Cam's physical ability is remarkable. Bradford is a little higher than some might put him. Bradford's, you know, arm talent is top-notch. If you're ranking players right now, what's that blend look like for you in terms of what they're able to do and then, I guess, what they have shown the ability to do consistently?
See, with me, when I'm scouting a quarterback, I isolate everything around them and I just evaluate that quarterback. So what is he from head to toe? How does he look mentally? How does his mechanics look? How is his footwork? I don't really worry about everything that's going on around him because that can cloud your judgment. And what I mean by that is, you know, we say a guy like, let's say Andrew Luck, for instance, we expect him to elevate the talent around him, but he really hasn't been doing that just because he's been turning the ball over so much. So everyone says he doesn't really have talent around him, which he really doesn't. He really only has T.Y. Hilton and Frank Gore around him, but let's just evaluate the traits of Andrew Luck. He's shown to be extremely advanced mechanically for his age. I'm not sure exactly what his age is right now, but he's only been in the league like 5 or 6 years, I believe, if that long. But mechanically, he's very advanced for his age. But let's go back and let's take a guy like, let's say, Blake Bortles, who's the same exact stature, but we talk about his release, his decision-making, and his mechanics are just awful. So I think when you evaluate quarterbacks, you can't just take into account what's around them. I think you just have to isolate and focus on that one guy from head to toe, whether it's mentally, physically, footwork, intangibles, whatever that may be.
How about you, Prince?
Andrew Luck is 27, by the way. But I'm really similar to JR in that respect. Is I try to get rid of, you know, wide receiver routes or scheme, all that stuff, and I just try to see, are they doing what they're. First and foremost, I look at what are they being asked to do, and that, you know, that's kind of how I evaluated Teddy over the last couple of years. Is what was Teddy being asked to do? Okay, he's being asked to do. So based off that model, you know, I look at his mechanics. I look at, you know, how's he doing in the pocket. I look at the subtle little movements that he's making, you know, mechanics. And then I also look at, you know, ball placement is actually really important to me, you know, not just obviously leaving receivers, but is it, you know, does it look like it's more of a soft touch? Does he look like he's more like Sam Bradford, who tends to just kind of gun it in there? And that kind of plays a huge role as far as how I evaluate how well a quarterback is progressing, because I do think that a quarterback, even if they're, you know, someone like Aaron Rodgers, you can actually track and see how much better his passes have gotten over his, you know, over his years in the league. You can see that it's becoming, as crazy as it is, he's become more accurate. He's become more better at that, you know, improvisation that he's able to do. So I kind of just look at, I evaluate what they're asked to do, and then based on within that, you know, I kind of grade them based off, are they succeeding, even if what they're being asked to do is outside their skill set. Only because I think in this league, I think other positions are constantly asked to do things that they're not always comfortable with doing, and things that don't always match their skill set. But we still expect them to perform at a decently high level, and I feel that should be the same thing for quarterbacks. Because we talk about, oh, when they're not in the right scheme or they're not doing things to maximize their talent, it's like, well, that's the card that you were dealt. You know, you still need to perform at a high level, even if the scheme doesn't match, you know, your necessary skill set. So that's how I go about my evaluation.
Okay, makes sense. And since we're out here talking about other people's work, we're not just going to, you know, go out here, talk a bunch of smack, and then move on. One of the things that I've seen a couple of times on Twitter today is, if you don't like my list, make your own. So I have made my own that I will put in the show notes for the show. Feel free to destroy it as you see fit. Moving right along, I wrote an article that I put up on Sunday, and Matt Collar also put an article up on Sunday talking about the Vikings defense. And I know it's something that, again, we've had some offline, off-air discussions about. And the prevailing sentiment amongst Vikings Twitter, really amongst most people, is that, you know, the defense is going to be good. Like, the defense has got better every year that Zim's been here. So next year, or this coming season, the defense is just going to be better. We're going to have an elite defense. And because we have an elite defense, it doesn't really matter too much what we get on offense, because we'll have an elite defense. And that's all we really need if we get competent play on offense to get us to the playoffs. What are your thoughts on that? Because defenses don't tend to stay great for a long time. When you look back at things historically, what are your thoughts on where we're at with the Vikings defense, what you expect to see from a progression standpoint? Are there any areas that concern you? Yeah, just really all of the above. Vikings defense, what are your thoughts for us going to 2017? Starting with you, Yinka.
I'm actually not in the camp of, I think that the Vikings defense is going to progress or even get better or even stay the same. I actually think they're going to regress a little bit. We've talked time and time again that this nickel position that's not set in stone. Yeah, we're going to give Mac opportunities. We're going to see, you know, who wants to win it. Maybe Terrence Newman gets some snaps there or whatever the case is. I'm actually worried about this defense taking a step back. I don't think we are going to be a top five unit. I do think we'll still be at a top 10 unit. I don't think we're going to regress that much. But I think there are holes that aren't filled that, you know, we're kind of just thinking, you know, oh, yeah, you know, we'll be fine. We have Harrison Smith, who just had a surgery. We'll be fine. We have Andrew Sendejo, who just had a surgery. We'll be fine. Sharif hopefully might come back. And if not, you know, we've picked up some other guys. But I do want to have a disclaimer as far as I don't expect every starter that we have on defense to be elite, first and foremost. And then also within saying that, I also don't expect every backup depth guy to, you know, be able to contribute the way that an elite or even a starter would be able to. I think there should definitely be a difference, and there should be, I mean, you'd hope there wouldn't be, but there kind of should be a little bit of a drop-off. I think we need to be realistic that backups, you know, they might be still progressing, obviously, but there should be a little bit of a drop-off between your starter and your, you know, your second guy.
So when you're mentioning some holes or some areas that maybe make you a little nervous, what are some of those areas that you're not feeling maybe as confident about as you'd like to?
Corner being, you know, corner most importantly, in my opinion. If Rhodes goes down, I think we're in trouble. If Harry goes down, or just secondary in general, I think if any one of those guys, like more specifically Rhodes or Harry goes down, I think we're in bigger trouble than we think that we are. I'm not as worried as far as the linebacker spot, just because of what we do as far as our nickel packages and some of the other looks that we give. But I think the other most concerning part would be the D-tackle position. I think what we need from that position is obviously helping against the run, being able to free up Linval a little bit more so he can do a lot of what Linval is good at. Secondary obviously being the most pressing, and then D-tackle. I do want to get to a point where we can truly, truly, truly have Harrison Smith just roaming all over the field. I've been watching some film, and when he's moving everywhere, he is just so dangerous because you can't account for him. His skill set is just that good. But secondary would probably be my biggest area of concern, more specifically nickel.
How about you, JR?
What you're seeing with the Vikings defense is they have the same exact thoughts as all of us. We all know the secondary is a liability, but it's a weak point, so to speak. We all know Harrison Smith and Anderson Dayhill had offseason surgery. Trey Waynes is a question mark right now. Terrence Newman is getting older as we speak, and Xavier Rhodes has proven himself to this point, even though he's only put together 1 year of consistency at an elite level. But what you're seeing, what they've done this offseason, is they've beefed up the defensive line, and what they're hoping to do is they're trying to create endless pressure on the quarterback, so it kind of masks their deficiencies on the back end, and I think that's what they're trying to do. You know, you see them bringing a guy like D'Tone Jones, they draft a Jahlil Johnson, and they sign a guy like Will Sutton. So they're trying to beef up that interior. And we already know we have an elite guy that's shown elite traits in Danielle Hunter. Everson Griffin is, you know, a multiple Pro Bowl player, and Brian Robeson still is productive, even though he's going on 33 or 34 years old. So what they're trying to do is create a really good rotation at defensive line and create pressure on the quarterback, just so they can have an endless rotation. And by them getting pressure on the quarterback, it kind of masks their deficiencies on the back half. So my biggest issue right now is at Will linebacker. We seen it in the Colts game. Base 4-3 defense, and they just ate us alive by running the ball and making our weak side linebackers, who was Chad Greenway at the time, cover those tight ends down the seam. And it's just something he couldn't do. Emmanuel Lemire, he's just an unproven guy at this point. He's played mostly special teams. We say we signed a guy, Elijah Lee. He's a seventh-round pick. How much can we expect of him early on? I don't think he's ready as a run defender, but, you know, a guy that can cover tight ends down the seam, I think he can do that as a rookie, but he has to gain weight. He's only 225 to 230 pounds right now. He's still very lean. He doesn't really look that heavy. And Will linebacker just really worries me right now. We said we can bump Kendricks out on third down, possibly, you know, in nickel, and let Gideon or Brothers play on first or second down, maybe. We don't know. It's just an unproven right now, and Will linebacker really scares me right now.
So based on what you said in terms of the team looking to kind of follow, I guess you'd call it the Carolina Panthers method of use your D-line to create that pressure so you don't necessarily need to make that higher-end investment on the back end. What differences do you think we might see from kind of the Vikings? Are they going to be more aggressive? Do you expect us to see more blitzing? Like, how do you expect things to kind of change up? Or do you think they're just hoping that the front four will be good enough just to get pressure based on all the guys they brought in?
So I haven't really talked about it much, but I think this is really what I think they're going to do. So I think we'll see brothers play a lot of Mike this year, along with Gideon, along with Eric Kendricks. And I think they're going to use Anthony Barr more as a pass rusher this year, just because they didn't really add a defensive end this offseason. They signed an undrafted guy, Tayshaun Bauer, but we know he's a long shot to make a team, make the team. Otherwise, they really didn't address the defensive end depth. And you really only have three guys that you can consistently depend on. You know, you have Everson, you have Danielle Hunter, and you have Robeson. And, you know, Weatherly, he's more of a rotational guy at this point. So I really think they're going to use Anthony Barr a lot. And pass rushing downs is a situational defensive end, just because I think the regression kind of scared them a bit last year, just because he took a big step back last year. Why not get him back more comfortable to what he was doing in college? And, you know, he's shown elite traits at doing that pre-draft. So why not get him back to being more comfortable at what he was doing pre-draft, opposed to forcing him to play linebacker where we've seen him regress? So I think they'll use him more as a pass rusher this season.
Yeah, Prince, and what are your thoughts on that in terms of Barr kind of getting back to being a little bit more aggressive, getting after the quarterback a little bit more? I know Matt Kohler wrote an article suggesting that, you know, maybe it's time to make Barr more of a situational pass rusher. You talked about a little on the Purple Podcast as well. Like, what are your thoughts on that in terms of really playing more to Barr's strengths versus trying to turn him into that more traditional three-down linebacker, if you will?
Yeah, I think you touched on it a little bit as far as, you know, having pressure be, you know, having pressure from your front four be where the Vikings are going to lean more towards to obviously make up for, you know, maybe the lack of reliability in the back end. I have been toying with obviously having Barr, you know, play, you know, that right defensive end spot, and then sliding Everson Griffin in and Danielle Hunter on the, you know, the left defensive end spot, and really having another pass rusher in there like a Dayton Jones or, you know, Jaleel Johnson. So you do have, you know, pure pass rush that's coming and speed that's coming on, you know, third and long type situations and stuff. Because I think what you're seeing from my film study over the last couple of days is in third and long, we're getting beat because not just because we're not getting home and containing enough, but I think we're not getting to the quarterback quick enough to cause enough pressure there. And I think the Vikings, if you've seen them over the past couple of years, they've done very well with generating pressure and generating hits, you know, after the throw. And that's what's caused their secondary to look a lot better than it actually is. So I'm hoping Barr will get more to more pass rushing situation, not just from a defensive end spot, but also just general, you know, being that Sam linebacker and having more unique blitz packages where he is being able to blitz from linebacker position or even starting to move him around a little bit. And I know that we don't see that very often, but I think he's athletic enough where you might be able to move him around. Not as maybe not as quick as Eric Kendricks, but I would like to see Anthony Barr get moved around a little bit more to see how that what offenses might call.
Awesome. And for me, I'm a little torn on this one because obviously on the one end of the spectrum, the numbers say that, you know, it is tough for an elite defense to stay elite over a long period of time. You're really in year two now of the Vikings defense being a very strong defense. In the last 20 years, only 14 teams have been able to kind of maintain their status of holding their opponents under 310 points and take that streak into, you know, a third year. So on that hand, you know, I'm nervous that, you know, as Yinka said, we might regress. But on the other hand, every year that Zim's been here, there's been a notable increase in our DVOA. There's been a notable increase in our points per drive. And those are often more predictive measures of how a defense is doing. So, you know, I guess I'm hopeful that, you know, that trend continues while also being very nervous about, especially as Yinka mentioned, that nickel spot, and how Mackenzie Alexander is going to transition into really his first year playing that position full time. And of course, it's going to be now, you know, in the NFL, and his first game of the season is going to be against Drew Brees, who, you know, is going to test him every play until, you know, Mackenzie shows that he's able to hold up. Switching gears to, I guess, the last main topic we're going to talk, we're going to go over today on this podcast, is the predictions for the Vikings wins in this upcoming season. So there's been a bunch of different things that have come out over the last couple of weeks. Vegas released its opening lines for over-unders. Mike Clay from ESPN released kind of his predictions on where folks would be in each of the divisions and what the records would be. Football Outsiders did an update post-draft to show what their expectation was for where teams were going to finish. And then RotoViz also released an analytics-based projection for where they expected the Vikings to finish. And going through all of those, kind of the top end of the scale that you get is the Vikings finishing with 9 wins. And then the bottom end of the scale that you get from Football Outsiders is the Vikings finishing with 6 wins. Where are you guys at with this thing? Based on kind of the things that we've talked about leading up to right now with the defense maybe having some questions, but, you know, they have been getting better. You know, Sam Bradford has a full year in the system, better weapons around him, arguably, than he's ever had in his career. He might take a step forward. What do you think about these predictions? Are they being too hard on us, or you guys think we're going to be in a better spot than this come the end of the year?
Me personally, I completely agree with 9-7. I've said that all offseason. I love the additions that they made offensively. I love the Dalvin Cook pick. I love the Elfline draft pick. I think the season really falls on one person, and I've said it all offseason. His name is Pat Shurmur. I think the season lives and dies by Pat Shurmur and how he executes as an offensive play caller. The numbers don't really stack up in his favor. We've talked about it off air plenty. His offense has never finished above 18th, I believe. We don't really count him with the Philadelphia Eagles just because he wasn't calling plays. Everyone knows Chip Kelly was calling the show there. So a Pat Shurmur-led offense hasn't finished above 18th overall in the NFL. And I think in order for the Vikings to reach their ceiling, so to speak, I think they're going to have to produce more than that. I think they need to finish at least in the 14 to 16 range. I think they have to be top 15, in my opinion, in order for the Vikings to make the playoffs, just because I firmly believe that's why the Vikings flamed out last year, just because the offense couldn't sustain drives and the defense was just tired after the bye week. They burned out. They played outstanding those first 5 weeks to go 5-0, and the offense just didn't sustain drives. You know, the one game they did play well was against Green Bay. And, you know, just later on in the season, they just couldn't finish drives with touchdowns. They constantly finished drives with field goals, and it just put stress on defense, the defense, and it was just too much for them to defend. And, you know, time to time, they needed the offense to get a score here or a score there, and they just couldn't finish drives with touchdowns. And in the end, the defense just ended up being exhausted. So this season really rests on the shoulders of Pat Shurmur and how he does as a play caller.
So what are your thoughts on Zim's kind of recent comments about we just need to get to 21 points, 21 points and we're good? I know, Yinka, you've done some research on that, on kind of where that would have us ranked and where the Vikings really need to be scoring to get to actually average versus that 21. I guess, what are both of your thoughts? And we'll start with you, Yinka, about that 21-point mark that Zim put out there. And then also how that 21 points equates to the win projections that everyone's put out there for us.
Yeah, I mean, when you really look at it, I know Zim was obviously talking about in context, he was talking about how many more points we needed to generate per game, obviously, to, you know, get that win just because of what our defense was doing. But as we saw with the Green Bay game, with the Indy game, with I think even the Redskins, or excuse me, the Washington game, there are going to be times where we are going to have to generate more than 21 points. And I think that's a fair assessment. We need to be putting the ball in the end zone. But I don't think it's just enough to just be like, okay, if we score 21 points, we should be, you know, we should be winning majority of our games. Well, you know, we are starting to get to the point where we're facing more of those powerhouse offenses. Our very first game of the season is against Drew Brees. You know he's going to put points, and you know he's going to score. He's going to score. I don't think that it's enough for us to be complacent with 21 points. I think it's more realistic for us to win more games that 21-point threshold shouldn't be there. I think for us to win more games, we need to be around the 24-25 threshold. That would have led to, I believe if we had scored 25 points every game, I believe we would have been, I want to say it's 11-5 or 10-6. So, yes, we would have, you know, we obviously would have won more games. But, you know, there are just going to be times where it's not always our defense's fault that, you know, a team is able to put up, you know, 28 points. It's just, you know, when you face Green Bay, they have the ability to score 30 points, you know, just in a half. And we have to be able to start getting to the point where we can, you know, we're not never going to be the team that we can go blow for blow for with the team. But, I mean, it's sad that when we go down 14 points, you know, it pretty much looks like the rest of the game is over. So I think that's where it's going to be part of Zim to kind of step back away from, you know, the defensive side and find ways to generate more points. And I think one of the things that I've been researching is we need to find ways to generate more first downs on when we're on our first down. You know, I think what we saw often enough and what I saw often enough is, you know, third and long, third and short, you saw a lot of underneath crossing routes that were just short of the first down marker. Something I want to see more happen, and I think it's also going to lead to more maybe points scored, is generating more first down on our first down. So
with all that said, I know that you know, obviously we want more points. What are you thinking about where, you know, we're predicted to finish? So JR is kind of coming strong, feeling like 9-7 is an accurate, you know, an accurate prediction, projection for where the Vikings finish. Where are you on that? Are you at the 9-7? Are you at something better than that? What are you thinking we're going to finish at?
Yeah, so every year I normally, I usually don't put, I mean, I try to put like what I think it's going to be, but I normally have myself as a, in a range. I do feel like our floor right now is 7-9. I think that that's very possible within the realm of, you know, everything that I've said. If we take a step back on defense, if our offense continues to be what it was last year, I do really feel like we could be a 7-9 unit. However, I do think that our ceiling is more around the 10-6. So, I mean, 9-7 would be kind of a good, you know, happy medium between my floor and ceiling. But I do feel like, again, if we can get more things clicking on offense, if our defense can stay that top five, I'm more looking at, you know, DVOA and, you know, points per drive and stuff. I do feel like 10-6 is more realistic. I don't feel like we can get anything more than 10-6. If we can, that's great. I'm okay with being wrong, but in my opinion, there's just too many question marks on both sides of the field, offense and defense, where I'm still worried that the offense isn't going to be able to generate very many points because of our disposition as a defense. And then as far as defense, I don't know, you know, if all these blows that we saw, the defense, are we going to be able to overcome them to stay a top five unit?
So from a philosophical perspective, that's because you brought up a couple of really good points there, is right now the Vikings and the way we're set up and the way Zim has said, he said many times that he wants to play, is we kind of grind the clock out, don't let our opponent score a lot of points, and we kind of win a lot of close games. We win a lot of kind of ugly close games, and that's kind of the brand or the style of football that Minnesota wants to play. Like that, you know, we're the tougher team. In the end, we're the team that's going to make the plays that need to be made during crunch time. But there's a lot of variance there because there are a lot of close games. It's really, you know, one play here, one play there. Yeah. And that can really swing the game for you. Do you want to see us, you know, if we're talking not just next year, but even next year and beyond, are you guys looking for us to really double down on that strategy where we are just better running the ball and so we're better able to play kind of Zimmer ball? Or are you looking, as JR mentioned, with Pat Shurmur, for us to maybe open things up a little bit more and try to score more points, but understand that in trying to score more points or being more explosive, it does open up some risk and it potentially could put the defense in some bad spots over the course of the season? Where are you guys on that in terms of what you think is the best way for the Vikings to maximize their opportunities to be a playoff team and potentially go deeper in the playoffs?
I think, you know, to win a division, that's fine. As far as, you know, he wants to be a blue-collar team, getting back to running the ball, grounding the pound, and grinding the game out. But in the playoffs, we know you got to be able to throw the football as well. You have to be a dual threat. You can't just be able to just run the ball and not have a resemblance of a passing game at all. We've seen it exclusively in the Super Bowl last year. You have to be able to throw the ball downfield somewhat. And, you know, that's really what won the Patriots the game. Let's say the Vikings were to go down, what was it, 28-3 to the Patriots, or to the Falcons last year in the Super Bowl. Let's just say the Vikings were in the Patriots' shoes. We all know that we wouldn't have any confidence at all if we were down 28-3 to be able to come back in the game. So you have to have some resemblance of a passing game. And even let's think back to when we almost beat the Seahawks in the playoffs last year, what got us down the field? It was throwing the ball as well. We weren't able to ground and pound them out of the game. You have to have a resemblance of some sort of resemblance of a passing game in order to be a threat in the playoffs. And, you know, I'm fine with them saying we want to get back to being a blue-collar team and, you know, ground and pound and grinding the clock out if we want to win the division. That's fine. But once you see these high-scoring offenses like a Green Bay and a Dallas in the playoffs, you have to have some sort of passing game in order to keep up with those teams because, Yinka, you mentioned it earlier, when we go down 14 points, what are we going to do if we can only run the ball? And it's kind of a crazy comparison. I like to compare it to Georgia Tech. Whenever Georgia Tech goes down 14 to 21 points running that triple option, it's over. So if you're not able to throw the ball, you're messed up. You can't really do anything. So I want to see them be able to throw the ball down the field as well.
Well, first thing here, JR, Reggie Ball slander will not be allowed on this podcast, okay? Reggie had at least one or two comebacks in his day, okay? So that's first things.
Was it ever weird to y'all that Georgia Tech always had a legit wide receiver, even though they ran a triple option?
I don't know how they kept recruiting boys down there. Just a big, fast dude who should have been playing in the Big 12 or something, but they were getting them every year.
Remember Demaryius Thomas? Remember Stephen Hill? Stephen Hill is legit coming out. So they always keep a stud wide receiver. It's always amazing in a triple option to have a great receiver.
Prince, you got any closing remarks in terms of what you want to see from us in terms of the philosophy offensively? Are we speeding things up, trying to score more points? I know that you are our resident QB hater. And typically want to see the QB have less responsibility and less influence in the outcome. You want it to be about the team. Yeah. And you really, really love those running backs. So are you here to say, defend Zimmer Ball, or are you on JR's side in terms of we need to throw the ball around a little bit more and try to score some more points?
I'm going to split the difference. I touched on it a little bit as far as something that I've seen. I watched the Chicago. I'm on week 17 as far as what the Viking season is. And again, something that I saw so much that it's so frustrating to watch was the inside crossing routes, which were always short of the sticks. Third and six, third and seven, third and nine. It was always. Even Kyle Rudolph in the middle running a crossing route. I'm like, what are you doing? And when you have three receiving options doing that, I don't think that you're not going to be able to generate much of an offense. I mean, our guys aren't speed guys in that respect where difference with the Patriots, where some of those routes, you know, will lead them to, you know, getting them extra yak yards. But what I'm advocating for, again, is not just passing on more on first down, but I guess I'm advocating for finding more unique ways to generate 10, 11 yard, whether it be pass or run on first down, because something that I saw, draw play, first and 10, you know, or you have, you know, fullback, whatever the case is, you know, run out the dot. And I didn't see enough, you know, some of them stretch plays, some of them, you know, shotgun runs where you spread the defense out and be able to do more things out of that look. So I do think that I don't think that we need to pass more. I think we had a lot of passing that went on. I just think that we need to be more creative in the way that in which we pass. You know, it's the age old mentality of, you know, work smarter, not harder. And I don't think we need to work harder. I don't think we need to add more notches to Sam's belt as far as how much he needs to pass. He passed enough this season. It's the way in which he was passing, which wasn't completely his fault, just schematically the way things were drawn up. So I'm not an advocate for more passing, just more creativeness.
Okay, well, I guess we'll let you get away with that that very creative way of riding the fence on this question. we'll wrap that discussion and slide into kind of any upcoming projects or any work you guys have going on that the people might need to be aware of.
Yeah, so I've just been working on 2018 draft stuff. I know it's early, and I've been flooding everybody's timeline with gifts of 2018 prospects, but y'all will get into it eventually as we get closer and deeper into the NFL season. So I'm just getting ahead on everything and typing up some scouting reports, and I'll release a couple next week. I've been doing wide receivers all week, and I'll start running backs next week.
Yeah, get on them running backs, Doc. Get on the running backs.
How about you, Prince?
You know, something I thought about it today. Jason, I know you and I have obviously talked about, I've gotten some Twitter conversations lately about it, you know, about QB stats that are more correlated with winning. And, you know, something that I've been trying to shift my gear is as far as, you know, being how can we eliminate the effect that a quarterback has on, you know, essentially how they affect the team. So I'm actually trying to look into doing a little bit of a deeper dive with, you know, some of the stats that are more correlated with losing and more stats that are kind of just that have less of an effect on, you know, on the games and stuff, and how to find more unique ways to eliminate the quarterback from being such a, you know, heavy effect from games and stuff.
Spoiler alert, and you can't.
But I mean, I think there, I mean, something that I am trying to see is obviously things like interception rate. You know, I know that we talked about how completion percentage was, you know, strongly correlated with, you know, more wins and stuff. But I'm actually trying to see, you know, if does it actually affect more so, is it strongly correlated more so with losing than it is with winning. So, you know, trying to do some reversals as far as, you know, a lot of these advanced stats that we have out there, and seeing if I can find, you know, trends and stuff from teams who, you know, have been consistently losing, or even the teams that consistently win, and see what areas that they, you know, aren't, you know, they're deficient in, and how to, you know, raise or lower those to see what the effect has on the outcome of the game.
So the real question I think that everyone wants to know on that is, how much time are you spending in the library working on the public computer to get all this stuff done, since, you know, since your computer went by the way a couple of weeks ago? And were you ever able to find your library card?
I'll just say this. Martha Jo knows me by name, and she has a little spot picked out for me in the corner. And she knows that no one can touch that computer because that's the Prince spot. So
cool, she brings
cookies. It's
Well, as I said, I'm going to drop these QB rankings that I threw together in with these show notes, and might do a companion article to defend myself from the Twitter slander that I'm sure to get after these rankings go public. Outside of that, nothing else for me on the immediate horizon. What I'd say to all of you is support our man Tim Brown. His new podcast will be dropping at some point later this week. He also had some computer issues, so he'll be re-recording and getting that out to you guys here pretty soon, so make sure that you're supporting him. And also, support us. You know, subscribe to the podcast, review the podcast, rate the podcast, follow the podcast on Twitter. You know, we want that support. We need that support. Give us that feedback so we can keep trying to make this a better product for you week in and week out. Yeah, with that, I'm signing off. Jason Brown. Find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And thank you for joining us for another week of Climbing the Pocket Podcast with JR, Yinka, and No Miles. Have a good night.
And No Miles.